Hour number two here on WEEI Afternoons on an early January Tuesday. That means, Nick Fitzy Stevens, I'm still allowed to say Ted Johnson, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So you guys, good to see you guys. Good to be here today. I missed all you guys. It was fun to hear you guys on the post game, last game, and I got to hear Dan.
Speaking of that, what are you doing around 1:30 on Sunday night into Monday morning?
I'll be talking to you guys from my car on the way home.
If we fall asleep on the air, can you just call in and tell the producer to just patch you through and you'll take the wheel?
You know what though, the way the season has unfolded and the game's importance that they're playing this Sunday night, there will be a lot of people listening, believe it or not, at that time of the morning.
They'll be exiting Gillette either feeling like, hey, this might just be a Super Bowl contender, or exiting Gillette feeling, what the hell just happened and where did my season go?
And those guys better have the dump button ready because I need to haul off.
Absolutely. So, so tune in Sunday night after the Patriots-Chargers game, Six Rings post-game show here on WEEI. But, Ted, I wanted to get your opinion real quick on something I think you may have heard Mark Schlereth going off on quarterbacks and how their job isn't really that hard and all these awards shouldn't go right to. So you do. Do you agree with him?
Well, we come from the same. He was defending the era of football. He's defending our era.
But also he said, I mean, he got his mocking voice out and was like, oh, if the safety is over, do this. If the safety is here, do that. He was mocking quarterbacks like the reads aren't really that hard. Thoughts?
You know, the game has been made simpler and easier and less physical for the quarterback.
Yeah.
So I understand why he might feel that way. Even though he's an offensive guy, you think he'd be defending the quarterbacks more. But he's defending, I think, the era in football in which we played versus the era in football in which they play now.
Right. And then he threw out that quarterbacks wear pink jerseys at practices.
Okay,
I'll trust him late in the week when the bleach gets in the red.
You know what? I'm all for that. You know, defend the our eras. He talked about two-a-days and three, and having, practices were hard and guys, it was just a different game. And it was. So I like that he's taking shots at today's players and how soft they are.
All right, Stiz, it's 3 o'clock. It's time for some three-point stances.
Green 19!
Ready!
Just count to three.
That's three!
Three shall be the number thou shalt count.
Pierce for three. It's good!
Three fabulous flyers.
And the number of the counting shall be three.
Got tip scores! Ties it 3-3!
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons. Three hosts, each of which presenting their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you will lead us off on today's three-point stance. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance today. Are you ready?
I am.
All right, here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
So I know we're in the midst of the Celtics and the Patriots and everything going on, but it's still the offseason for Major League Baseball. And yes, there's still some big bats out there. There's some money to be spent by the Boston Red Sox. In fact, all their money is still left to be spent because they haven't yet. And we are getting reports that they are still prioritizing Alex Bregman, St. Bregman, to the point that the number may be up to 6 years and $171.5 million. I wanted Alex Bregman back. I'll say that entering the offseason. I kind of wanted him to just keep his contract and stay with it. But at 6 years and $170 million, I do not want Alex Bregman back. He was 31 last year. We had the lowest WAR in 5 years. We saw him get hurt. We saw him fade. We saw his defense struggle at times. I'm not spending $170 million over the next six years for a clubhouse leader.
You are not spending. You personally are not. So why do you care what they are spending?
Because you know how they work, Ted, and if they sign him, that'll be the reason they can't do something else. Make another move down the road because they got to balance all their spreadsheets and their books and everything.
So help me out. 6 years, $170 million. What's that a year?
Just under 30
million.
28 and change. Yeah.
So what did we think he should go for? How far?
I think that's right. It's actually the length that bothers me more than
6 years. Okay.
6 years a long time.
Okay.
Did he look old at times last year, Ted?
After the injury.
Okay.
And you're talking about his defensive issues at the beginning of the season
yep.
for a little bit, and then he cleaned that up. So You know, I think he was value add to that team last year.
He was value add to that team last year. Will he be value add to the team in 4 years?
I think just as
5 years.
Okay.
6 years.
But you know what? Do we care?
Yes.
We need him for 3 years and then let him go. Who cares?
I don't know. Then I'm just worried the way they look at things. That'll be the reason they can't be active in the 2030 free agency.
They need to stop
agency.
Thinking that way, though.
Yes. I wish they would just do what a lot of football teams do. Have like a budget for dead money. Like put a number out there. Every year, we're probably going to pay out $40 million that isn't really well spent.
That's
it's
right.
going to waste it. But you know what? It's on the back end of there was value.
Just in their minds, they get it's a 6-year deal. It's really a 3-year deal worth $60 million a year. That's how they got to look at it. Sorry.
I'd almost rather do that.
It's a good way to look at it. It's the price of doing business.
But that's why I liked the original contract more that then he opted out of. It was like, oh, I like a high average annual value on a short-term deal, 3 years, 120. Now all of a sudden he plays one of three, opts out, and you're tacking six more. So really you signed him for 7 years. If you do this deal right now, then you originally signed him at a 7-year, 200-and-something million-dollar contract.
If it's going to be a buck 70 over six, plus you add one for 40, that ends up being seven for 210, so he gets $30 million a year. That's actually pretty good negotiating and decent-ish market value for the Sox, Boris, et al.
So, Ted, you want him on this. If this is a real deal.
I say, yes, because of who have they gotten? To get you worked up and fired
Nobody.
Up. Nobody.
Bo
so
Bichette's still out there.
It puts more pressure
not coming
to get
the
this
Red
guy
Sox.
Bo knows Boston.
Yeah, I keep dreaming.
Wait, Bo knows Boston. Where did that one come? I've never seen that T-shirt.
I don't know. Maybe you can do it as soon as he signs with the Red Sox. Fitzy, do you want Bregman at 6 and 171.5?
No, I think that's an overpay, but at this point now the Red Sox have painted themselves into a corner, so they kind of have to, Andy.
Yep. You're right. It feels like they do this all the time.
Want and need are two different things.
They do this all the time.
Doesn't
it feel like
all the time?
They're like, they're going to be...
Oh, we lost out on John Lester. Let's sign John Lackey. Great.
How about just do the first thing that you think is a bad idea? I think history shows that if you did the first thing instead of the last thing, you'd make out better. Like Mookie Betts, sign him. Then don't sign Devers on the back end. Let Devers go. Like, do the first thing, not the...
Hit Xander Bogaerts up early. Sign him to the 6 and 150 that would have gotten it done. Don't let San Diego swoop in for 11 and 280, which you then laugh at, and you let him go someplace where his stats fall off a cliff and he's not half as popular.
So you're telling me re-sign players that are fan favorites, re-sign players who people already bought jerseys and shirtsies for instead of just bringing in somebody else?
Yes, that seems like a positive strategy. Also,
don't they got like $320 million burning in their pockets right now because of the money they saved on Devers? Don't they have to...
Well, in theory, but Dan Ball likes to tell me, the extensions that took over, and that eats up some of that money.
Okay, instead of the voice, I'll tell you what the real information actually is. They have about, so they're right around the first threshold. They have about $20 million to spend before they get to the second tax threshold, which is the thing that we were told that they simply will not go above for whatever reason.
And then the other issue I have is inconsistency. I think we can all... come to grips with rules if we know what the rules are, right? Like, if you're going to have a so I was told, not by them, but through reporters, they couldn't get Pete Alonso. Why? He was too old, right? Isn't Bregman old?
Oh, by the way, this just in. He's not as old as Alex Bregman.
Right, so...
Wilson Contreras.
So they couldn't
the majority of Major League...
They couldn't spend 5 and 150 for Pete Alonso, who everybody thought was the perfect fit, right? Home runs, right side, wife
Stop
is
making
from Quincy.
Sense, Andy. It doesn't work for the Red Sox.
And then we're going to sign somebody older for more money after we traded for somebody older. And, like, they are infuriating. I get that we are passionate in Boston, and that's a good thing. But the passion shouldn't be fury. It should be fun and fanaticism.
And don't you think to just add to it, it's just you see what Toronto's doing, you see what the Orioles are doing, and you're like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
Like, are you kidding me? I mean, if they weren't as active as they were, I wouldn't feel as bad. But, you know, these are two teams that theoretically you should be outspending them when it comes to free agencies that are kicking your ass in that department, and you're doing nothing.
And we were going to build on the momentum of a wild card series and a play. You know what I have envisioned? I have envisioned WEEI Afternoons, fingers crossed, in August at Fenway Park talking to Alex Cora for a fourth or fifth place baseball team that really, they might sell us, we're only five games back of this or something. Yep. That's what I worry about, is that you're falling much, you didn't springboard forward, you're falling back to the same old, same
old. You're going to miss those summer nights when we all went as a show to just watch, you know, Aaron Judge hit home runs. And
Because you know what? It was cute when Aaron Judge hit home runs because I was seeing history against a good baseball team that I thought was going to make the play.
Right.
When he does it against a crappy baseball team, I'm just going to be pissed. It's more reason to be pissed.
Yep.
Well, Andy, don't forget, too, what did you say a few moments ago? Red Sox and Boston fans are what? Are passionate, right?
Yes.
Don't forget, that aspect is viewed as leverage by the Red Sox. You're going to go. Just don't forget it. I'm not saying it's something that you shouldn't have, because it is something that Boston sports fans inherently have, and it's one of the I would argue that the passion here is greater than any other sports city in America. But don't forget that Red Sox-wise, that is viewed as leverage and a way to make money. Just don't.
They
weaponize
your fandom against you, Dan. They literally hold it over your head like, oh, what are you guys going to do? Stop coming to Fenway if we don't spend as much money on the team as you want us to? Come on. They're like drug dealers at this point. Well, that's probably not going to go over very well, but too bad.
Hey, why is Ken coming down the hallway, and why does he want to talk to Fitzy during the next break?
Andy, to bounce back on your original question, 6 for what, 170?
1.5.
I would not take Bregman at that number, and I still don't believe it's legitimate. I'm sure Scott Boras wants that number to be real and has his friends in the media that are propagating that.
Yeah.
I don't think Alex Bregman's legitimate market is 6 years. I think it's closer to four.
Well, don't you think, Ted, you're a Bregman guy.
Yeah.
If 6 and 171 was on the table, why hasn't it been signed, sealed, delivered? Why hasn't he had a press conference? Why hasn't he been, you know what I mean? Like, doesn't that seem like the offer he wants?
Yep.
So it does feel like there might be a little BS Boris kind of crap going on here.
Oh, yeah. Have we heard him linked to any other team? Detroit
not
makes the most sense.
There was just that. There was that weekend that Arizona flirted with him via Twitter, and that was about as far as we could go with it.
Did I hear that's where he makes his home?
Off-season home, Scottsdale.
He's not going there. I would call this bluff. I'd say, listen, pull a Belichick. Didn't he like to, like, force people take it now or it won't be here later?
Oh, yeah. And then you come back and you get a lesser offer than what you got before.
Breslow, do that. Bresbot, do that. Yeah. Be like, here it is. I'll give you 4 and 140. 4 and 130.
120 is an even $30 million.
Okay, 4 and 120 is on the table, Alex. It will be off the table 90 minutes from now.
I just don't understand.
Treat him like
how you don't
Edelman
take
or something. This is nuts.
Right.
I don't know how you stand.
Because unless he's just doing the full trust in Boras and it'll work out, although he could be one of these guys, the Montgomerys and others, that you end up being the case study of it doesn't always work out.
Right.
And now you're playing somewhere you don't really want to play on a deal you don't really like. And the Red Sox are,
if I had to guess, just knowing him like I know him from covering him in Houston, he loves this environment. He loves the profile of this team. He loves Alex Cora. He loves playing in a town that cares as much as the Red Sox fans care. I think he wants to play here above anywhere else. That's my feeling.
So just reach a deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm done. Right. Rant over.
Good stuff, though, man.
I've also landed on the Red Sox and the Yankees are fully building their team based on the impending lockout in Major League Baseball.
I hate that, too.
And they won't. I wish we got whispers of that so we just – that would maybe help me put some of this stuff in better perspective.
Just putting two pieces together, which is the lockout is expected after the end of this year, and the Red Sox now all of a sudden are beholden to only signing one-year deals.
But don't you think the Red Sox are trying to outsmart what is going to happen? They want to predict, and so that they want to be, when the time comes, they can tell everybody, see how smart we were?
Right.
We saw this coming, and we made the deals that were going to protect us from getting hurt from this.
I think the Red Sox and trying to outsmart everybody go together in the same sentence quite well. But we'll put a pin in that one for now, because Nick Fitzy Stevens, I ask you, are you ready?
Time for my 60.
Time for your 60, which begins right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, ladies and gentle fans, I would like to courteously welcome you to Scapegoat Season, where the trappings, misgivings, and failures of one and many a football teams are often blamed on one single or two people who are most likely not to blame for that particular team's failures. The latest in a long line after, of course, Black Monday, which saw the dismissals of Pete Carroll, kind of warranted, Jonathan Gannon in Arizona, reasonably warranted, Raheem Morris down in Atlanta, not quite as warranted. Kevin Stefanski, definitely not warranted, considering how messy ownership is in Cleveland and meddling. the Haslam family happens to be. Today, I'd like to point to the dismissals of defensive coordinator Witt and offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury in Washington. Why? Because obviously Cliff Kingsbury is the reason why Jaden Daniels was only able to play four games this year and why Terry McLaurin only played half a season following a long protracted contract dispute. Perhaps Cliff Kingsbury will land on his feet elsewhere, but to say Cliff Kingsbury, who was the hottest name in football last year, is the reason why Washington crapped the bed this year is stupid, but that's just scapegoat season.
Yeah,
is that what you're hearing, that he was the reason that he's the scapegoat, or are we just assuming that because he was fired?
I think Fitzy's assuming that. I actually assume something else. I actually assume there's a story here. Was he already negotiating with teams? Was his focus on other jobs?
He's got 1 year left on his deal, and it's supposedly Andy is a mutual parting of ways. He's not the only scapegoat, but the fact that he started coming under fire this year, when he had to deal with no McLaurin, no Austin Eckler, 4 out of 17 games for Jaden Daniels, and that elbow injury that will always live in my nightmares, is just like more proof that it's the what have you done for me lately. Raheem Morris, hey, Arthur Blank, here's a hug. Blank is his last name, everyone. I'm not making a joke. Hey, and they give him a hug, and next thing you know, you're fired. Kevin Stefanski, I still think the Stefanski thing, I know we got into the coaches yesterday, I thought Ted would have a lot of thoughts on this as well. The Stefanski thing blows my mind. Yeah, he authorized 5 years and 230 guaranteed for Deshaun Watson coming off of all the allegations in Houston. Eventually, he was going to have to be the guy that had to pay the toll for all of their bad decisions and cash misgivings as well. It's just one time after another, somebody has to be the guy to take the fall for someone else's bad decisions or injuries.
I think, Fitzy, it feels like to me sometimes they do it just for the fan base. You know, like some people would say,
a pound of flesh, you say?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you think, you know, last year, was it fair that they fired, you know, our guy, you know,
Mayo?
Mayo, right? Some people would say, oh, you give him one, he only had 1 year, but the fan, it's, I'd say, you know, a lot of times these guys get fired, these coordinators, to appease the fans.
Sure.
And the media.
And head coaches, too. And I think it can be, I actually said this, you bring up Mayo. It was unfair.
And head coaches, yeah.
It was unfair to fire Mayo. It was also the right thing to do to fire Mayo, yep. Right? Can both of those be, this, you know what I mean? They can both be true.
Yeah.
And I think Stefanski's in the same boat, personally. It's probably unfair, Fitzy, you're right. The Deshaun Watson thing, you don't have a quarterback. But he's also had a losing record 3 of the last 4 years and, you know, 3 wins last year, 5. Like, at some
point,
you just
gotta move
on. Did
he forget how to be coach of the year, though?
I think he's overrated. But I just think he's been there 6 years. Like, how long do you get?
And I want to put one more thing. What do you guys think of? I feel like Cliff Kingsbury has a little bit of Lane Kiffin in him. I think he loves to hop around,
yes,
and move around and try and get a better deal somewhere.
Yes.
Cliff just seems like a guy that is never happy where he's at and is always looking for the next big deal.
And that's
once he looks at that mirror to admire how handsome he is, then once he looks past that, he looks for this next opportunity.
Didn't Cliff? Did he have like a big portrait of himself in his house or something?
Does he really?
I think he did a little bit of the.
He wears
Alex
shoes
Rodriguez.
That are worth more than Marcus Jones' salary.
So. Remember that photo that went viral from the COVID draft when he was in his living room and it's this lavish house in
all
Arizona.
White.
And he's got this like crazy backyard and all. I think Cliff loves himself.
Oh, the coolest guy he knows.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
Fine.
I also,
bury me in that yard. I don't get it.
And that doesn't seem to jive with Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn doesn't seem like.
Dude, he wears his hat backwards.
I was going to say, he looks like he might manage a Buffalo Wild Wings or
he's one step away from wearing a visor.
Right. And he's a defensive guy. And like, I could see those two not really being just aligned philosophically, like personally, like what they prioritize. But this is, and Stiz, we were talking about this off air, this is part of the cautionary tale that the Patriots should pay attention to. When you have a shot, when you've put yourself in position, go for it. Because I'm sure the Commanders thought, all was great. We're in the NFC title game. We got a young quarterback. And then the next year, they're kind of going the Houston route, right? Bobby Slowick was a star, and then Bobby Slowick was out. Now you have Cliff Kingsbury out after he had made
Super Bowl or bust.
Now, and Eberflus got canned, but he deserved it. Eberflus deserved it.
Better get it now. Well, you got the chance.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead,
get to Ted Johnson's 3-point stance. Well, we have the chance. Teddy, are you ready?
I'm ready, bud.
All right, here is 60 seconds.
This is going to be a real quick one. This is from the little audio from this last Week 18 Cowboys versus Giants game. Go ahead, Sis.
Throws it. It's intercepted by Okereke. Down he goes
oh, that would be Joe Milton throwing an interception in this last game. And I just thought, now that the season's over and we can recap some of the worst takes of 2025, that anybody who thought that Joe Milton was better than Drake May, we do have our boss. I don't want to say his name, but
Ken Laird.
Okay, you said it. Thought that that was one of the worst trades, maybe in Boston sports history, up there with the Babe Ruth trade when they traded away Joe Milton. A lot of people thought that, but Joe Milton last year versus the Bills when he was a Patriot, 22 for 29, 241 yards, a touchdown, and a 111 rating. This year versus the Giants in the last game of the season, 7-13. One interception and a 38.3 rating. I think the Patriots got it right at the end of the day when it comes to who was the better quarterback and who should be shipped off and whatnot. So, Joe Milton. They dodged a bullet. Now,
all right, so if we're doing the mea culpas, Ken didn't do a mea culpa. You kind of did it for him. Okay, yeah. He had a hot take. It was too hot to handle kind of take. We also had discussions about the way this happened. They trade Joe Milton. They had to, what was it, clear the runway for Drake May.
Yep. I had no problem with it.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? A lot of people didn't.
It was giving somebody something rather than going the earn it competition route, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Whatever my arguments were, they were wrong because Drake May went out and had basically a perfect season. Basically could not have developed better. Our guy Brian Hoyer, who we'll talk to next, said he made like a 4-year jump in 1 year. Yep. Anyone who thought it was bad to trade him, regardless of whether you thought Milton was good or not, if you thought it was bad to trade him, you were wrong.
Well, you know what? We were wrong to not trust Vrabel.
Correct.
We didn't trust him. Are you sure you don't want to bench Rhamondre for Fumlin? Are you sure?
Nope.
You sure you don't want to punish him?
What about Peppers? You tell me Jabril Peppers can't help this football
team?
There
you go.
Kyle Duggar, all these.
On
why are you getting rid of all the cap?
On and on
David
and on.
Andrews sat front row at your press conference. Yeah. You're going to get rid of him?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yeah. And you know what? It's the right move. So, yes, we all owe your boy Vrabel a big sorry late in the year. That's going to do it for our three-point stances today. Up next, as I mentioned, we had to bump him up a little bit here, an hour, actually. Brian Hoyer, from former Patriots quarterback. He's got his own podcast. You see him on NBC Sports Boston. We're going to ask him about Drake May, the playoffs, the offense, everything Patriots heading into this huge playoff game Sunday night at Gillette Stadium. Brian Hoyer next, but first, Dan Ball, what's trending?